Today is Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. This matter is before hearing examiner Gary McLean. This is the pre-hearing conference for Energize Eastside South Bellevue segment, file number 17-120556-LB. And 17-120557-L0.
Great. Thank you for calling and setting this up.
Sure.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. For the record, my name is Gary McLean, and I serve as one of the hearing examiners for the City of Bellevue, and I will be the hearing examiner on this matter, which is for a conditional use permit application. That is permit number 17-120556-LB. The applicant in this matter, can you all hear me in the back? Raise your hand. Yep, okay. All right. The applicant in this matter is Puget Sound Energy, and under the city's land use code for conditional use permits, the process that's laid out for a conditional use permit process, it's a type one action, which means that the department director makes a recommendation on the application, which goes to the hearing examiner, and then the hearing examiner is to conduct a public hearing. It's a pre-decision hearing in which the applicant bears the burden of proof to show that they have complied with the applicable city codes for such permit. In this matter, because there's an applicant and the director has made a recommendation, those are two parties, and then anybody who's an interested person, because it's a pre-decision hearing, will be given an opportunity to speak during the public hearing. The process is laid out in the hearing examiner rules and Rule 2.5 generally, which lays out the format that would be followed in a hearing of this sort, where the examiner makes an introduction, the staff report is summarized, then the applicant's presentation is allowed to go forward, and if city staff has any follow-up differences of opinion, they can make a comment on that. And then we turn to interested parties that wish to speak regarding the pending application. Following that intake, we move to any rebuttal testimony or comments by the applicant or the city staff that are pertinent to the matter. And throughout the process, as the hearing examiner, we reserve the right to ask questions of folks through the process to keep it as efficient as possible. So that's just a general format that we would follow. Because this is just an application now, I note that there is no companion appeal. And commonly, on matters that I've handled as hearing examiner, it's not uncommon, I should say, where an application goes forward for a development permit and there is a companion critical areas permit known as a CALIP in the city of Bellevue. Sometimes those decisions are appealed. It's not uncommon for that to happen. And where that does happen, you have a consolidated hearing regarding the critical area land use permit and the conditional use permit itself. In this matter, my understanding is that the CALUP, the CALIP, the critical areas land use permit, for this matter went forward and there was no appeal. So procedurally, the only matter before me is the conditional use permit application. So that's the premise on which I'm moving forward. Again, as I stated, the burden of proof is on the applicant for all such applications. So that's just a little background. I just wanted to lay out what we have there. And then I would like to move through with introductions, who's representing the applicant team, who's representing the city staff team. And then I'll get to the issue. There were some pre-hearing motions that have been filed, so I want to address where we are in that procedurally. I don't plan to rule on those today, but I do want to address the procedure that's behind those and going forward how we'll handle that. And address any pre-hearing matters that the parties believe would be helpful in making sure that information is available, an exchange of information if there needs to have something like that has happened in an efficient manner, when the staff report and when the project file is available, if it's not already, things of that sort, we'll go over that. And then, as always the case here in the city of Bellevue, especially when we have large files and large records, one thing I want to make clear from the beginning, and if I don't reiterate it towards the end, somebody should remind me, that if you are coming into the hearing and you're bringing with you copies of exhibits and things that aren't already part of the stipulated record that is here for analysis on the pending application, you need to bring enough copies to distribute to all parties and to the hearing examiner's office, which would be the clerk there, Karen Hohu, and myself as a hearing examiner, because we do not want to delay the hearing, to step back and anywhere else to go get copies made of things. So, for instance, if you're bringing in a photograph that you think is incredibly relevant, or an illustration or a graph or something of that sort, bring copies with you. And if it's a color photo, bring a color copy with you. And I say this because plenty of time people just hit copy and here comes a black and white, and your point is it vanishes. And I wanted to start there by saying that throughout the process, I encourage all participants in the hearing to follow what I call my interpretation of the best evidence rule. That's something that lawyers learn in law school. Different law professors teach it in a different way. But in this context, it's not a lawyer telling you something. It's somebody who is a decision maker. And what I'm getting at is, if you're a participant in the hearing, always bring forward your best evidence. In other words, if you're the best spokesperson to bring forward a point, then you should be the one making that point, as opposed to 16 people saying the same thing and saying it poorly. If one graph makes the point better than 16 pages of handwritten notes or something like that, bring your graph forward and explain it. In other words, use your best evidence. If you have 16 experts on a point that are all trying to say the same thing, pick the one who speaks English. Pick the one who people in the room can understand and follow along with. Pick the one who can answer cogent questions in a fashion that is understandable to people. And I let you decide what your case presentation will be to everybody who's a participant or to a member of the public who chooses to participate in the proceedings. But again, remember that. What is the best evidence? What's the best way for you to present your evidence, to put the best foot forward? And always remember that as we go forward, okay? So I think now would be a good time for introductions. Why don't we start with the telephone participant, because I believe that's one of the applicant representatives. We'll just start there so we don't have to go backwards. And on the telephone.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is Erin Anderson of Van Ness Feldman. My working address is 719 Second Avenue, Suite 1150 in Seattle, 98104. And I represent Puget Sound Energy, the applicant, as their outside land use counsel.
Erin, how do you spell Erin? E-R-I-N?
Yes, it is. And Anderson is with an O.
Thank you. Only in Seattle I have to ask that to get that clarified. That was spelled that right.
That's
Thank
right.
You. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
My name is Sarah Leverett, Sarah no H. Same address and law firm as Erin Anderson, so Van Ness Feldman, and outside counsel for Puget Sound Energy.
Will one of you be first chair, or will you be co-counsel and swap off on things, or what?
Erin will
Your Honor, this is Erin. Oh, I was going to say, go ahead, Sarah. You're there in person. It's probably clearer if I keep my phone on mute.
No, go ahead.
Your Honor, we're going to co-chair this project. Sarah has been intimately involved with the matter for 6 years, and she and I will present this jointly.
That's fine. That's fine. I'll only ask that if we get in the throes of it, you'll have one speaking agent. In other words, if an objection is made, one of you will respond, not two, and things of that sort. Just so, and I'll turn to the city and say the same thing. So, all right. So we have Ms. Anderson and Ms. Leverett. How do I spell your last name?
L E V as in Victor. E R E T T E.
Got some of it right.
Lots of these.
Okay. All right. And to the city team, who do we have?
Elizabeth Stead, Land Use Director for City of Bellevue.
So the recommendation is under your direction, correct?
Matt McFarlane, Assistant City Attorney, and I am the attorney for Development Services Department.
Cheryl Zakreski, City Attorney's Office as well, and I will be second chair.
You get to roll in a giant carp of that.
That's exactly right.
Ms. Zakreski will remain my supervisor even if she's second chair.
I note that before today's pre-hearing conference that Mr. Aramburu, representing an organization known as CENSE, C-E-N-S-E, submitted to a pre-hearing motion, which by pre-hearing order, I invited responses from the other parties. And yesterday, in electronic communications, because of the weather and things of that sort, normally I would have said a reply would be due a day before the hearing, but given the weather, I believe Mr. Aramburu indicated to Ms. Hohu that he needed more time, and so I gave him leave to file a reply, which should only be to the responses, which shall be due by the close of business today, sent by a PDF form electronically to Ms. Hohu. And that's one item that's still outstanding. Mr. Aramburu, if I turn to a point where you need to participate, I'd like you to be at the microphone up here where it's easier to record your input. Okay. Okay. To Ms. Anderson or Ms. Leverett, my understanding is, again, as I stated, this is a permit application. So about some of the things I want to talk about is about how much time and logistically, materials, things of that sort, do you think you're going to need to effectively make your presentation?
Your Honor, this is Erin Anderson, and I will respond to this question. Because of the format that the city goes through, where the staff presents a staff report, and in regard for the voluminous nature of the record, it is my expectation that presentation of the project itself will be pre-presented by the city, and consequently, I do not anticipate that the various elements of specificity to which PSE will either speak or make a presentation to would be more than 2 hours. And I know that sounds like a lot of time, but I'm anticipating breaks for the public. It's a crowded room, and to the extent the hearing examiner has questions of anybody that we have speaking, they would be available then as well as at the end.
And Ms. Anderson, I take it to mean that your statement that it might be 2 hours. It may be quite a bit less if the staff summarizes things, and you believe that if you choose to say something like we concur with X, Y, or Z, and we only want to know that these three things are things that we have problems with. Is that fair to say?
That is correct. Yes, our case will largely be foreshadowed by the city's presentation, but responsive to your reminder that we want to put our best evidence forward, there may be several points that we want to expand on. So 2 hours is a very robust estimate.
Gotcha. Okay. And to the city team, Mr. McFarland, about how much time does the city staff believe that the presentation and summary of the staff report would take?
We anticipate having Ms. Stead, the land use director, provide an overview of the different decision criteria and the land use code criteria that's implicated by this project. And then our environmental planning manager, Heidi Bedwell, who drafted the staff report, will then provide a presentation that goes through the major points of the staff report. I would anticipate that probably the total amount of time we would need for both of those presentations is about 30 minutes, would be my guess.
Is that combined total or 1 hour total?
Combined total. We certainly would be available for any specific questions thereafter. And I can go ahead and just thinking ahead, we would also have our environmental consultant, who is Mark Johnson from ESA, available, although we are not planning on having him present a presentation at the outset. And then we would also have a expert that we would coordinate with Mr. Johnson if needed regarding the pipeline safety issues, the Olympic pipeline safety issues. Those are the highly technical issues that the staff report has a number of conditions of approval that go to those. And either Mr. Johnson or the expert designated by Mr. Johnson would be the best person to speak on those issues.
So the expert, you don't have to name
him. I would have to check with Mr. Johnson. He's not here today, but I can certainly provide that name. Other than those individuals who would provide either city presentations or be available for questioning, we weren't anticipating having anybody else at the hearing.
And turning back to the applicant, do you know who you will be using to make your presentation? Will it be by counsel, or do you have consultants that you intend to lean into?
Your Honor, we will have a director from the company presenting on the system itself. To the extent we are looking for engineering detail, we do have a variety of people inside the company that will be available to speak to some of those things. There will be a general presentation of the transmission system and how the company operates. I expect there to be 2 to 3 individuals within the company that could speak to those various points. We do have several experts that will be available to speak. I've not made a decision on whether after the city puts on its presentation, and certainly Mr. Johnson and their pipeline expert, I may not need to call them. And of course, council will make an overview of the process, how we got here, and some opening comments from council. So short council, some company representatives speaking, and possibly an expert.
And to each of you, to the two teams here, the applicant and the city staff team, I will grant you leave to have your witnesses provide narrative testimony where that's more efficient and effective. But I have the joker here, and I can decide it's not being effective. And where I'm going with on that is if somebody starts to read me the phone book, I'm going to interrupt. I don't need you to read something to me that I can read. And I may turn to the attorneys to interrupt the witness, and I may tell you that the narrative testimony has ended. You need to start posing a question to which the witness will provide an answer. And my hope there is that you would better focus the testimony and direct the witness towards something salient, relevant, making a point, instead of just swirling around the drain until something just comes out the other end. I would rather, and I mentioned that because this is an application, it's not an appeal, so it's up to you all how you present the evidence, and it's not normal that I have to interrupt, but it does happen, it really does happen, and sometimes you as counsel may want to interrupt and say, Mr. Examiner, we'd like to go ahead and start with the Q&A, because you notice the witness is having a difficult time. Basically moving forward with the presentation, and or there may be something they're speaking to that really isn't relevant to the application, but they feel it's very important. But you're professionals, you know how to apply that yardstick and reel in your witness as you need to, okay? All right. Again, applying the effective presentation rule in your head. Okay. All right. To the city staff, because it's an application, is the record already publicly available?
What we're referring to is the department file.
The project file.
We have shared that we filed it with the hearing examiner's office electronically. We have also...
I heard about that.
Yes. And we provided it to the attorneys for PSE and also Mr. Aramburu. I can check with my paralegal, but I believe that we have a hard copy
by this Thursday.
One is if the hearing examiner would like a hard copy, and it is colored, are in color copies. And then we would keep a hard copy, as we do with all project files, in records at Development Services for anyone who wanted to come by and look at it. Given the size of this record, which is about 12,000 pages, we would certainly encourage people to come by and check out the thumb drive that we will also have available, rather than taking the banker's boxes out to Service First counter. But I think we could also make the links that we have provided to the hearing examiner's office publicly available on our website, so that the information that we have filed with respect to the file is also in the Energize Eastside website splash page on development services page. I don't think that would be a problem. I could double check with our support staff, but that's probably the most practical way for us to push this 12,000 page record out to everyone.
Just double checking myself, because the hearing examiner rules were updated after decades of having, well, the same rules. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe we changed it, but basically, let's see, the record is due.
I believe the record's due to be filed with the hearing examiner's office. We would...
And it reads 5 days before.
We've tried to do it early, given the size.
At least when I've been the examiner, we've always set a date certain. So just to let people know, the rules usually are the record's available 5 days up. But Mr. McFarland, you're representing that probably by the end of this week.
By Thursday, we'll have a hard copy. We already have thumb drives for anyone who wants to look at it. And I don't want to speak for our administrative staff, but I do believe we could also post a link to it on the Development Services website page.
I'll allow your IT people to tell you whether you have to break it up into part A through Z.
I'm getting a nod from my client that we can do that.
The applicant, you've already, I assume you've received a copy of the digital record. Were there any materials that you all believe need to be added to the record beyond what city staff has that you're willing to make available publicly before the hearing date? Or are you satisfied that the record is complete?
Your Honor, we are working through that. I think my count was over 16,000 pages. We are working through it, and we have made our own copies. And to the extent there are materials that we think that are salient, we will certainly coordinate with the city and the hearing examiner's office to make sure that they are appropriately identified and marked before the hearing, as well as making copies available to everybody. And for the record, we're grateful that the city got the record out as quickly as they did, because it's giving us enough time to get through it.
Other than the motions, are there any pre-hearing matters that either of the parties believe I need to address today? We have a hearing date set.
We do, and I do have one scheduling issue to bring up. When we scheduled the Process 1 public hearing date for March 28th, and also when we scheduled this pre-hearing conference, which Development Services noticed with the staff report, which is not something that we typically do, because usually we don't have a pre-hearing conference date at the time we publish the recommendation. But we tried to schedule, I reached out to Mr. Aramburu and also reached out to PSC's attorneys. We tried to schedule these hearings around all the attorneys' schedules, so that everybody could fit it in to their schedules. It also wasn't entirely altruistic on the city's part, because my clients and I coordinated our vacation schedule around these hearings too. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows that we will be out of town during a period of time after this hearing today, from February 14th through the 25th. And we were hoping that if there was anything that needed to be filed or any other papers that weren't purely administrative
or oral argument,
that we could accommodate that vacation schedule that we have planned. And the idea was that with the March 28th public hearing date, there would still be plenty of time, a month of time, after we all get back in town.
No, I appreciate that. And I think I have a room full of people who would love to go on vacation tomorrow if they could, given the weather we've had. Imagine everybody's itching to get to Arizona or anywhere but here right now. Anyway, okay, I'll note that. Ms. Anderson, I heard you raise your hand.
I did. It would be helpful, I believe, in PSC, I can't speak for the city, but I think it would be helpful for us to have a date by which any pre-hearing memoranda must be submitted. And I would also appreciate any wisdom that the hearing examiner has on the propriety of filing responses to pre-hearing memos and then getting into the Mobius loop of reply, sir reply, that kind of thing. We have a massive record. Document management and conciseness is going to be really important to us. So certainty as to the propriety and timing of deliverables, and depending on the way the hearing examiner rules on the motions before him, I believe it may be advisable before this hearing begins to have an additional discussion with the hearing examiner about what elements are at question in this case. And I say that what sections of the land use code are pertinent to your decision and which ones are not, lest we lose control of this and spend 6 months in hearings and motions battle. So that was a two-pronged question. One, your wisdom on the propriety, timing of pre-hearing memos and whether responses, replies, and sir replies are appropriate or not. And two, perhaps reserving some time before the hearing begins so that we can gain clarity on what the applicable land use code criteria are for your decision on a conditional use permit. And this is not something I've discussed with the other party in the room, and this is certainly the City of Bellevue's code. I defer to their interpretation should they wish to address any thoughts on this now.
Well, normally my pre-hearing order does say what the issue presented might be. If I were to write it here and now, because there is one issue forward, it would be whether the pending application meets the approval criteria for a conditional use permit found in the city's land use code, which I believe is in, is that 20.35?
That's correct. And 30B.
30B
would be the specific approval criteria, and that would be the issue presented. And then it is on the applicant to demonstrate compliance therewith. But as this is an electrical infrastructure type facility, there are likely very specific city performance standards that might apply that are referenced in the staff report. Just as when it's a shoreline substantial development permit application, there may be additional performance standards that apply to boat houses and boat lifts and docks and things of that sort. We don't have those here, but I'm just saying it's whatever the application is, there are performance standards that typically apply. And if members of the public believe that a provision has not been appropriately reviewed, obviously they will make that comment and they will back it up with whatever authority they might have supporting their comment. And then I would, of course, allow the parties to respond by agreeing or disagreeing or demonstrating how they satisfy that as we move forward, if the case need be. Mr. McFarland, did you have a response on behalf of the city?
I guess my only response would be that the department has already generated quite a bit of paper regarding the applicable criteria. We have a thick staff report that is page one of the file, and I understand that there may be some concern on the applicant's standpoint that the hearing could go sideways, but I have faith in our process. I have faith in the hearing examiner to be able to keep this process on the rails. I do think resort to the staff report is where the department would start as the kind of alpha and omega of what is required, the analysis that's required with this project. To follow up on the point the hearing examiner just made, all of the electrical utility facilities land use code provisions that would apply to this specific project are analyzed in the staff report, and the department doesn't necessarily see the need for a follow-up hearing regarding the issues that are in front of the hearing examiner unless the hearing examiner himself thinks that that's necessary.
Okay. And I'll take the comment to be, it depends on how rulings go forward on any pending motions and what happens. I appreciate that. People are being cautious. This is a pre-hearing conference, so no disrespect taken or anything like that. I appreciate the remark. Okay. Well.
And quick clarification. So you will set a date for a pre-hearing memo or a hearing memo?
Haven't gotten to that. So I think we have three things on the table. We have motions, obviously. I'm going to talk to you all about that. And then whether pre-hearing memoranda are in order, and if so, the date by which they need to be submitted. And I think we kind of addressed the provisions of the land use code that would have been attached. See the staff report and see the conditional use permit approval criteria that are found in the city's land use code, which is has been used many times. There's been a lot of CUPs that have been reviewed in the city of Bellevue. Some approved, some denied. All of them conditioned. So anyway, okay, we've got that. No one made a remark about moving the date of the hearing. I'm going to turn to that, given that's why I asked about timing. I have no idea how robust the public comment will be, but I will note that I have reviewed the publicly available information that's on the website, the page that's available, and I will say that it appears that public engagement has been substantial. So I have no reason to believe we'll have an empty room. But I do note that it appears that one group of citizens, and maybe it's all of them, maybe it's most of them, I don't know, is represented. And it appears their comments are coming forward, at least initially, in a very organized fashion, which may help keep things in a more orderly fashion, in a more effective manner, too. Testimony might be presented in a more effective manner. But I do note that in matters such as this, I've never seen one that opened and closed in one day. And I would like to be able to do that, but here today as we speak, Karen, did we have the 29th?
Yes.
I would like everybody to go ahead and block out your 29th. I will not favorably hear an excuse saying, oh my goodness, I planned a vacation that day. That's just not, that's not good planning if you did that and you've got time to change your plans. But we do have the public hearing room available that day. So if we need to continue, and I reserve the right to do that, I would announce that at the hearing on the 28th. But no one should expect that we will. So everybody that intends to participate should make every effort to have your testimony and your materials ready to present on the 28th, assuming it will close at some point. The hearing would close at some point on the 28th. I will not hear somebody saying, oh, but I thought I could go again on Friday, so I didn't go on Thursday or whatever day. It is Thursday, right? Or is it?
Thursday.
Sorry. I'm sorry. You may correct me if I got my dates wrong, but I'm just saying you need to be ready to go the first day. That's what I'm saying. That's to all potential participants, parties, okay? So we have that. And
that will be during the daytime on the 29th then?
Yes, we have the room available in the daytime. Yeah. All business hours. And Karen, which room did we get this, or the council chamber?
126, the council chamber.
So council chamber. And to let you all know logistically, this is a pre-hearing conference, how that works. Well, staff usually throws a wild card because you have that well to the right that frequently I've seen some hearings where you have some staff there, and I know that usually that's where the hearing examiner clerk is located to control all the audio visual. My preference would be that we have counsel for one party to the left and counsel for one party to the right of me with enough space between me so I'm not looking at your notes and you can't see mine. Is that agreeable to the parties?
I think the only thing that we would require is just the overhead projector for PowerPoints. But as long as we can, as long as my clients can hook up their computer to the overhead projector, we're fine with that arrangement.
All witnesses will be testifying from the center of the room at the table there. And for narrative witnesses and testimony, they'll be seated.
Okay.
Unless they have back problems and want to stand, but I'm taking it. Most people would rather be seated with their notebook in front of them, and that's fine. And then when we turn to members of the public that will be speaking, they will do so probably from the podium that we have there, which does have space if you want to lay papers out in front of you and a microphone and things of that sort, okay? We haven't talked about time limits on witness testimony. And I will say this without setting a limit right now. To both parties in your presentations, the applicant bears the burden of proof, so I don't see a problem with the time frame that you have suggested you might undertake, and the city, the same thing. And if you need a little more time, you're going to let me know. To members of the public who may come and wish to speak, it's not uncommon for me to impose time limits. Usually what I do is at the beginning of the hearing, I will ask people to raise their hands. How many people think they might be speaking today? And if I see 100 people raising their hand, I am certain that I will impose a time limit. My time limits usually are from 3 to 5 minutes. It depends on how many folks want to talk and how much time we have to allow for that. Remembering that I may ask you some questions, I don't count that against your time if I interrupt. And the type of questions that I might ask, sometimes people come up and they tell me they know something, and they're very smart, and they want to tell me they know this better than anybody else in the room, but they don't tell me why. And I might ask, what's your background? What's your education? What's your training? And I understand people get caught up in things. Well, that's relevant. It adds more credibility to your testimony. If you tell me you're a rocket scientist and you're testifying about jet fuel, I'm probably going to take your testimony as pretty credible to you if you tell me. So I might interrupt you and ask you some questions sometimes, okay? The time limits that I do impose, I also want you to know that if you're reading from something, you probably will be allowed to submit that up unless it's in the form of an expert report. If you do submit an expert report at the hearing, I expect the parties are going to reserve the right to ask for additional time to respond to that. Similarly, if it's a document that's already in the record, in the form of written comment that you provided, I'd like you to identify where it is from one of the parties to tell me where it is. And I may ask you if you have anything else new to add other than that letter that you submitted last April or something. I'm just making up an example. And if somebody, Freddie Filibuster gets up and wants to talk about something that's not relevant and keeps talking and talking, and I see that 98 other people are sitting there very patiently and they're folding their arms and they're shaking their heads like, I want my turn. I may interrupt that person and say that your time is up. You need to have a seat. And if that person feels the need to speak again, I do not allow people to speak twice until everyone who wanted to speak gets to go once. So, in other words, you're at the back of the line. And then once we're done, when everybody's had one bite at the apple, I usually turn to the crowd and go, was there someone else that had something new to add that hasn't been said by other people that you feel you didn't finish yet? I turn to the crowd and then you raise your hand. And I don't let you repeat the stuff you've said before. I mean that. If you have something new that somebody else didn't come forward, I will welcome a second comment if you feel the need to do that, okay? But only after everybody else has had a chance to go first, because I know you all came, your time is valuable, you want to get in, you want to say your piece, okay? And I just want to be fair to everybody. Let's see. If people are representative of parties, I will allow them to make a request for more time. In other words, if someone steps forward and says that I represent the Smith & Jones Homeowners Association, we are 360 people. We've submitted letters and things of that sort. And I would like to speak on behalf of all our members, so I'd ask for more than 3 minutes. We'll talk about that. And if they do that, I wouldn't presume that it would be good form for all 360 people to come up one at a time and say the same thing behind that person. Does that make sense? In other words, your best evidence is your spokesperson, unless you've got something new to add, okay? And because I gave them leave to have more time, because they told me they were speaking on your behalf, okay? Just say that as a way to try to move it more efficiently for you all and effectively. Let's see, Karen, I covered your paper copies. Anything else procedurally, administratively?
That I can think of.
Okay. One thing to all parties, you've all complied with it appropriately. All electronic correspondence communications should be in an email format. To my attention, it would be directed in the hearing examiner's office email, which Karen has on all of you have. No one should be sending any direct communications to my email address or my phone number at all. They should all go to Karen, and she makes sure that I get them. Okay, you all have that. Any pleadings or responses or any documents, please do so in PDF format. The reason I say that is sometimes people accidentally send an Excel or a Word document. Those can be modified accidentally or intentionally, but if you accidentally send a brief or a motion or something like that in Word form, somebody may not open it the right way, and it may not read the way you meant them to read it, or they might change it. So PDF format takes care of that, okay?
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, so now let's go to the motions, all right? As I mentioned earlier, we had a motion to continue and consolidate that was filed on behalf of the organization known as CENSE, C-E-N-S-E, represented by Mr. Rambert. I received that, and then I provided an opportunity for the two parties, the applicant and city staff, to respond, which I have received written responses. And as I noted, Mr. Rambert, who's seated before me for the record, there's not a video, there's just an audio. Mr. Rambert, your response will be submitted by close of business today.
That's correct.
Your reply, I apologize. Okay. I will take that all under advisement. I will not, if I choose to call with oral arguments, that will not be between the 14th and the 25th.
Thank you.
It will be some date thereafter if I choose to have oral arguments. I believe that given the, I know you all to be very good advocates for your clients and other proceedings and things, I think I can read it, and I think I can look up the citations to authority and arguments that you've made. I'll make every effort to rule on it without oral arguments, but if something's a glitch in there, I'll let you know right away, and I would let your staff know. I would try to schedule that just as soon as possible. Even though you're going to be out of the office, Mr. McFarland, will there be somebody in the office that can answer on your behalf that yes, oral arguments are fine on the 26th or some date after that?
My supervisor and second chair can handle that.
Okay.
Mr. Kresge.
All right. And then I note that yesterday I received a copy of a joinder to that motion attempted by an organization known as CSEE. That they wanted to join that motion. Because this is not an appeal, in an appeal, parties are recognized and it's limited to people who are parties. This is a public hearing, it's a pre-decision hearing. And so any member of the public can participate in the public comment portion of the hearing to the party. And I'm going to ask what y'all might refer to as the stupid question first, because there would be a controversy if the parties have a problem. Does PSE have any objection to CSEE joining in the motion?
Your Honor, but for the fact that we've not received a copy of their motion, it doesn't come as a surprise that they would seek to intervene. And I would not have an objection, but I would ask that they provide that material to us post-haste.
And that's a fair comment. To the city, would the city have any objection?
We don't have any objection to the joinder. There was some substantive argument that was attached to the bottom of that letter, which was the joinder letter.
That I presume you haven't had an opportunity to respond to because you just got it.
That is correct. I have read it. I really do not think I can state on the record, I do not think the city has a lot to add to what it has already briefed, or the department does not. But if the hearing examiner feels like that substantive argument in the joinder requires or that there should be a response to it, then the city's more than happy to provide it.
I will say that...
Your Honor, if I may, because CSEE did not favor us with a copy, I withdraw my consent to their joinder. I was not aware of the motion until you mentioned it. The fact that it goes beyond a joinder compels me to ask for the opportunity to have a look at it first. And I'm happy to, within 24 hours, follow up with a PDF response to you and to the city on that. But I am considerably hamstrung here.
I got you. I'm going to make it a little easier for folks. The motion came in. It stands on its own four legs. I did receive the correspondence from CSEE saying they'd like to join in the motion. And it did just come yesterday after I've already received responses. So for purposes of considering Mr. Ramburu's motion, I will consider it as a logical document and a motion made on the four corners of the argument that were raised in Mr. Ramburu's brief and the responses received by the parties. Mr. Ramburu, as you're seated in front of me, please don't mention anything extra mentioned in the joinder request. I will go ahead and allow the joinder to be recognized, but I will not decide the motion based on any extra information that was attempted in that, because it should have been made at the same time the motion was made, and it wasn't. So I will strike anything and won't consider anything that goes beyond what Mr. Ramburu raised in his initial motion. Okay, and so there we go. All right, and like I said, I will make every attempt to rule on that without oral arguments, but if I don't, I'm going to let you know right away, okay? Pre-hearing memoranda, other motions of that sort. We do have one other motion. We had a motion, it was to compel some modeling information and data, and that was just received. The parties have not had an opportunity to respond. I will ask the simple question first, because if you all answer in a certain fashion, there won't be a need to have any responses. And I'm not saying that because I want you to do that. I'm just saying it because sometimes it happens. First of all, Ms. Anderson, did you receive and have you had a chance to briefly review the motion to compel modeling information and data again from Mr. Ramburu?
I have received it. I have given it a once over and will roll up my sleeves as necessary.
Do you object, or is the applicant amenable to working with them?
I do object.
Produce that information?
No. No, Your Honor, I do object to this, and I object robustly. I do. I object robustly. If you would like my responses in writing, I'm happy to meet them. We can give them to you now. I am prepared.
Let me turn to the city. Mr. McFarland, what's the city's position on the motion? Do you want the opportunity to respond in writing? You'll be out of town.
Well, I would say, just generally speaking, that the motion is asking PSE to produce certain information. I do think the motion is directed more towards the applicant than it is to the city, because it's basically a discovery request directed towards the applicant. I'd also note for the record that this is not a new request. It has been, as far as I'm aware, Mr. Ramburu and Ms. Leverett can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's already been raised in many different forums, and PSE would be in the best position to respond to that. That being said, the department has issued a very long staff report that goes through all of the decision criteria that's necessary for the department to evaluate this project under its land use code. We did not have the information that since has requested when we published that staff report and issued the director's recommendation, and we were able to issue a recommendation without that information based on our analysis of the land use code. What's far more important to the department is if the hearing examiner were ultimately to require the production of that information, just generally speaking, would be for the department to have an opportunity to process that information itself and then let all of the parties know if any new documentation has any impact on the recommendation that has already been issued. But as far as the motion itself and as far as any response to the motion, I feel like that dispute is between the nonprofit and the applicant much more so than the city, because the city's evaluation under the code, which is the issue before the hearing examiner, is already memorialized in the staff report without this information. That's a long-winded way of saying that we will respond if necessary, but we feel like that the applicant is in a better position to respond than the city is on this matter.
And Mr. Ambrew, on behalf of your client, in raising the motion to compel, do you all maintain the motion? Are you withdrawing the motion? Do you believe you can work out with PSC some arrangement absent any request for an order or not? Because typically where this isn't an appeal, where discovery is not uncommon in appeal cases, this is an application. So it's a little difficult for me to think of what is the basis of something, what was missing here, how is the recommendation wrong? Can you demonstrate that with this record, or is it just easier for you if you had it?
Well, this is Rick Rambert for the record. We do not believe that negotiations or discussions with PSC will resolve the issues that are found in our motion. I think that was your first question. Mm-hmm. I don't think that...
Sorry, I always try the easy question first.
Oh, there we go. We believe the information is very important to your review. We've set forth the materials and the authority in our motion. I don't want to repeat all of that.
I read it once.
You read it once, and Ms. Anderson's had a chance to read it. So we think, and we've put in the motion our supporting authority, which comes from section or paragraph 1.4 of your rules, that were recently amended, I see, I think perhaps by you, Mr. Examiner.
Well, me and three other examiners, yeah.
Okay. But in any event, the rules have been amended to allow the subpoena of information, and we think this information is very important. I don't see this as the time to be presenting oral argument on this subject.
You answered my easy question. You maintain your motion.
We maintain our motion. That's the long-winded version of that.
So that's fair. So to PSC Council, I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond, just as I did to the other motion. How quickly could you do so? Would it be possible to do that by close of business tomorrow or Friday?
I'm having some difficulty accessing some of my office materials because I'm stuck in Eastern Washington until Snoqualmie Pass opens. This is a significant motion in a pre-decisional proceeding that the city, to the best of my knowledge, has never authorized discovery outside of a civil proceeding subject to the civil rules. And this issue has been repeatedly hashed out. I would like more time to respond to this. I find this to be deeply offensive to the process, to the city's work on this, and to PSC. And it feels like an end around to accomplished goals today.
Okay,
and
Ms.
through
Anderson,
the motion that I'm concluding with you.
I'm going to interrupt you. I didn't invite oral argument. How much time do you want to write your written response? And I will credit Mr. Rambrew. Didn't go into an oral argument. I don't want you to. I'm going to give you a right to respond in writing. I understand the weather's been horrible, and you're going to have difficulty if you wanted to sit at your desk in downtown Seattle. You may not get there right away. So how much time do you think you need? If God forbid, should interrupt things, I'm going to be amenable to granting you additional time. But as we sit here today, how much time do you think you need?
I would like 5 business days to respond to his motion.
So a week from today.
Yep. In honesty, I got it yesterday. So a week from yesterday.
Okay, close of business Tuesday?
Certainly.
And if the city chooses to file any response at all beyond what you said today, recognizing that you don't have a dog in that hunt, so to speak, by close of business Tuesday.
We can do that.
And Mr. Examiner, on behalf of SANS, as I did before, we would request opportunity to file a reply.
Can I say that within one day?
Because
the civil rules are, and I apologize, that the rules are written and it invites responses, and stupid me just assumed one day, because the civil rules say that on your reply. Is one okay, or do you need two?
Two would be preferable.
So that would be closed business the following Thursday.
Correct.
The 18th is President's Day, next Monday. So I don't know if you want to shift it.
Ms. Anderson, is that going to mess you up? Can you still meet close of business Tuesday?
No, I'd prefer to push it to Wednesday. I apologize. I did not realize that.
All right. So yours will be due close of business Wednesday, which takes Mr. Ambrose to close of business that following Friday.
Very good.
Does that work? And we will assign numbers to those days when I open my calendar. But you all understand that. Okay. All right. The 20th and the 22nd, right? All right. Okay. I will try to issue a decision on both motions because I know your scheduling is very important. Within a week of the close of that, if I'm able to go forward with one before the other, I will. But it's more likely I'll rule on both of them at the same time, just to more efficient for the city's billing. Seeing as the hearing is set for the 28th, the city has made agreement that the record itself will be available long before the 5 days before the hearing, and I appreciate that, and I'm sure members of the public do too. If there are any other pre-hearing motions that any participant believes needs to be raised, I think those should all be resolved at least 14 days before the hearing. Which means that if people want to bring a motion of any sort, that's going to need to happen in early March. That would be a deadline. And the reason I say that is because responses and replies are going to be allowed if that is the case. I don't pretend to know what the motion might be. But how does March 1st, a weekday?
Friday.
Yeah, that's a good day. All right. So Friday, March 1st will be the deadline on which any pre-hearing motions, other than those that have already been filed from any of the participants, should be filed. If a motion is filed, as the rules provide, responses are, it refers to them as replies, but I'm calling them responses because that's the second brief that would be filed. 5 days. That's Wednesday the 6th, and any reply to those responses would be due no later than the 7th. The civil rules, it's one day on motions typically on replies. Am I wrong? That didn't change.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So I'm going to pick the 7th. And the reason I'm doing that is to give as much time before the 28th for me to have those rulings out on any potential motions. Okay. Did that address the procedural question about pre-hearing memoranda?
The procedural question about pre-hearing memoranda was more about a hearing memo rather than a motion.
Right. Well, I covered that. So the staff report, generally speaking, is the staff report here. And because it's already there, does the city feel a need to submit any additional summary document or not?
We do not. We just
what? I'm not laughing at you. I'm seeing your head going, I'm about to be on vacation.
Like I said, our planning was not completely, not completely altruistic. But once again, going back to what I said earlier, the city has generated quite a bit of paper already here, or the department has. And part of our goal with preparing the project file and including everything in the the project file, which is also the environmental documents, the phase one, phase two, and finally EIS, was to have a self-contained exhibit C1 that the city would then be working off of. I could anticipate potentially having some requests for judicial notice that the city would provide as other standalone exhibits, but the staff report itself, which is the first 150 pages of narrative and then 1,500 pages total with all the attachments, and then the end of the file, which has all of the environmental review, the city doesn't really have a lot to add to that narrative or that environmental review in the file. So we don't anticipate producing any motions. We don't anticipate producing any extraneous evidence. We certainly reserve the right to do so, depending on what happens. But by design, we have tried to package all of this in a self-contained unit so that everyone, including all the members of the public that are interested in this project, have it all at their disposal well before the public hearing on the 28th.
Okay. To PSE, how much time ahead of the hearing would you all like if you choose to file a pre-hearing minute? The date is the 28th. I'm thinking, I mean, typically, well, it depends on the hearing, but it's 7 to 10 days, and this one, would Friday the 15th work, or would Monday the 18th be better?
I think I would defer in this case to the hearing examiner's need to have time to get through everything. On this one, we'll abide by your instructions. You're the end recipients of it.
I'll give you more time. I doubt I would read it on the 16th and 17th, so I'm going to give you the close of business Monday the 18th. And if the city chooses to submit any pre-hearing memo by that date, and because it may be helpful to move it along, and it is an open hearing, will there be an objection from PSC or the city if I invited the two organizations thus far that have put in comments since and CSAEE, if they choose to file a written pre-hearing memo by the 18th? Would you mind that?
Certainly no objection whatsoever. My only concern is that we limit it to that rather than a back and forth of continued pleadings.
No, this is just, it's like argument. if you want to provide that. No, I'm not going to invite responses to those.
Not at all. The city does not object to members of the public providing.
And I mentioned that because it may be a more efficient way of presenting your case if you want to do that, you may not want to. And recognizing it's a citizen group, they may not want to bear the costs of legal fees and preparing such thing. I'm just saying if people would like to have that submitted to Mr. Rambrew, and I apologize to counsel for CSEE, the name's on the letter. I've got it here.
Mr. Johnson,
if he or another counsel would like to submit a pre-hearing memo on their behalf, those are invited by close of business Monday the 18th. They're not mandatory. They're just because it may provide a roadmap.
Does the hearing examiner want to put a page limitation on those?
10 pages.
I would support that.
10 and single space is fine. Okay. As long as the font is no smaller than 12. And I'm not kidding. Had it happen, nothing. One inch margins. I don't know you are. Okay. One thing I forgot.
Mr. Hearing Examiner, I was unable to hear what you just said on pages, font, and the like. I'm sorry.
Ms. Leverett heard that. 10 pages. Font no smaller than 12 point. Respect your one-inch margins and basically your rules for Superior Court, okay?
Double space?
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah. I don't expect anything different, okay? One thing I didn't cover and I meant to, is the fact that I do not have any financial interest in the matter. I don't have any political interest in the matter. I don't live in the city of Bellevue, so my neighborhood is not an issue. I am a PSE customer in another jurisdiction, not affected by this proposal. I am familiar with the Van S. Feldman law firm that is representing PSE in this matter. I have not had the pleasure of meeting you or Ms. Anderson. If I did, I apologize. Probably in a professional context. Mr. Rambrew and I have had professional communications and contacts. He's been on one side of the table representing clients here in the city of Bellevue before. And he's appeared at the Hearing Examiners Conference, where I serve as the president of the Hearing Examiners Association. City of Bellevue, I'm familiar with council and parties because you all have been here on several hearings, and staff in the city of Bellevue have made presentations at the Hearing Examiners Conference, as has Mr. Durr and members of the Van S. Feldman and your prior firm, the Stoll Reeves Law Firm, as well. I believe I can be fair and impartial in adjudicating this this hearing and this application. If anybody believes I can't be, I'd like them to let me know what your question might be today. All right, well then I will move forward in understanding. If you have any concerns, let me know. Mr. Rambrew, you're moving the microphone down. It wasn't because you're uncomfortable. I think you have a question.
I would just like to make a couple of observations for the record, if I may. From what I'm hearing, and understand, I represent Sense, which is an organization that has been...
I haven't done it yet. Go ahead and put the acronym in the record.
I don't know what the acronym is.
Move on.
So a couple of observations for the hearing and the proceedings. Number one, while this hearing was noticed in the staff report, there was not any indication that interested persons would be required to attend this hearing or make their views known at the hearing. So there are literally hundreds of people out there that don't know what's going on in this room today. So the deadlines you're talking about, some of the other things that you're talking about, I don't know how that's going to be disseminated so that interested parties might receive that information. That is a matter of concern. You've also indicated PSE has
indicated. Pause there, and I'll answer that as best I know. Anybody that's not here today that you think they want to hear it, a recording is being made of today's proceedings, and Ms. Hohu can make that recording available digitally, electronically, so they can listen to everything if they'd like to. And before today, some people called Ms. Hohu and asked if, for snow and other reasons, they said they might not be able to get here. They were invited to be part of a conference call beforehand. If people called in and said they couldn't be here, but they wanted to be, so we tried to make accommodation for people that called in and said they wanted to be here, so they could be electronically. Okay.
And I've heard from PSE that they might be presenting their position for a matter of 2 hours or so, and the city indicated 30 minutes. If our hearing starts at 6 o'clock in the evening, that means public testimony may not start with a lot of the usual to-ing and fro-ing that goes on in these matters until 9 o'clock. I think that's a little late. I anticipate a number of people coming to testify, and I think there's concern that if you're going to close the hearing at, say, 10 o'clock, that many people will not have an opportunity to testify that evening. And so I think that's a matter of concern for the many people that I don't represent, and I would not want the hearing to become kind of a shouting match about how we're not being heard and those kinds of things. So I bring that to your attention now.
I would object to Mr. Rambrew speaking on behalf of people he doesn't represent.
Well, I will interject in the hearing that I've done a lot of hearings, and and all these observations are supported by certain circumstances, depending on the load of people that are in the room at the time, and I understand that. And were you done? Because I can address that briefly.
I just want to raise that as a concern, just looking at the timing.
Concern received, and I will make a note to the parties, to PSE and to the city staff. I have the staff report. I've had a chance to review that information. And to the extent that the city staff and PSC believe that they can consolidate their remarks or say, I reserve if we need to carry forward to Friday to get into more responsive information about engineering technical reports or something. I'm just using an example. For instance, if I open the hearing and I see that we have five people, that's usually not going to be my concern that Freddie Filibuster, applicant or staff, takes up everybody's time. But if I see the room's got 20-plus people that all want to talk, the point is well taken that it's in no one's interest to get up to 11 o'clock before people get to start talking. And it may be that you all huddle and say, we can withhold these parts of the presentation until after the public comment so that people that came at 6 o'clock get to speak before that evening wraps. And we may have to extend into Friday, but I do want to make every effort to let people speak when they can speak. Okay.
I think that was the concern that I had. Yes, and thank you.
Okay. To members of the public, because this is not an appeal, it's an application. Public comment is not a Q&A session. You don't get up to the microphone and go, I accuse you of something rancid and awful. I'm going to ask you this question, and I want you to answer my question. No. Public comment is public comment. You tell me your position. You tell me why you have a problem with it as part of your public comment. And then if you believe that something wrong is in the staff report or that an engineer got something wrong, and I apologize, my brother and sister-in-law are engineers, so I keep picking on them, right? And that doesn't mean, and that's not to imply that these engineers will do a great job. But, you know, if the landscape architect missed something and you've got that, tell me what page is wrong and why you think it's wrong, and tell me, I really want to know why they ignored X, Y, Z. In other words, lay your questions on the table as part of your public comment, and then I turn at the end of the hearing, at the end of all the public comment, they will have a right to respond at their peril. And I use that word because sometimes applicants and staff, they don't respond to public questions that are just hanging out there. And your testimony is that they screwed up because they didn't do X, Y, and Z. And if they don't follow up and tell me that, that might not bode well for them. That's part of the hearing process, okay? But they have a right to respond, but it's not a Q&A session, so incorporate those into your public comments, okay? And that's the way a public hearing process works, all right? Were there any other procedural or administrative issues that you all think we need to address today?
Your Honor, this is Erin Anderson. I have two just clarifications. On the pre-hearing memo, the 10-page limit is inclusive of attachments. Correct?
Please only refer to the staff report and the exhibits
are
on main stand, right?
They are.
Yep. And to anybody else, okay, Mr. Rambrew and people, the staff report is main stamped and all the exhibits are. Make reference to those numbers as best you can. There's usually not a reason for you to reattach that unless there's like a map that's just wrong and you want to point that out.
Okay.
Zoom in on it. Attach it. Show it. But otherwise, don't feel the need to attach a 79-page landscape plan or something like that that's already in the record. Just tell me where it is.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. I had one other, and that is on hearing room decorum of placards, posters, campaign signs, happy hands, clapping, that kind of colors. Do you have rules on that or expectations for decorum?
Yes. I've never had it happen. And it rarely happens anywhere. But just to let you all know, I'm the hearing examiner, and think of me as sort of like a judge person. I don't wear a black robe. And by the way, you can refer to me as Mr. McLean or Mr. Examiner. or Your Honor, however you want to say it. I'm just a hearing examiner, so Your Honor seems a bit, but if that's in your nomenclature, you do what you're comfortable with, lawyers, okay? But Mr. Examiner works fine, okay? But to members of the public, signs and rowdy behavior like that, it doesn't help your case. I want to tell everybody, and I do. I don't like lawyers that whisper out loud while witnesses are testifying. I'm going to call you on it. That's bad behavior. It's bad form. And I'm going to do that to members of the public, too. If you're in the room and you don't like what somebody's saying and you're stumping your feet or beating your hand on the chair or something like that, that's bad conduct. And that won't be permitted. I may have to take a recess to tell everybody to go get a glass of cold water and chill out for a moment. Protests, groaning, clapping, any kind of demonstrative behavior like that, that is strongly discouraged. It's just not necessary. It doesn't go towards proving your case or showing me why you're right and somebody else might be wrong. Okay? And so I've never had to say anything about that, but demonstrations aren't necessary, and they're not going to be permitted. And when somebody's testifying, I'm going to make sure they give you their undivided attention. They're not allowed to do that to you either, okay? It works on all sides. So I want you to be fair to everybody else, and I'm going to make them be fair to you when you come, because I want to hear what you have to say, and I want to make sure they're respectful towards you. So I just ask that you be respectful to the other folks when they speak too, whether or not you agree with them, okay? All right. And I usually cover that before the hearing, but I'm kind of doing it today because I think we have people that might come back to the hearing, and I think we have people that plan to go back and talk to their neighbors and their friends and their families. So this is just sort of preparing me. That's why it's called a pre-hearing conference, okay? All right. Anything else to the applicant team that we didn't cover today?
To the extent that we need to identify and add exhibits to the record, do you want us to bait stamp them PSC, starting the number after?
I think PSC. That's appropriate. And by the way, you told me you would do that as soon as possible. Can you all do that within a week, or do you need until your pre-hearing brief to do that? I would rather you do it sooner.
Aaron, do you have
we will do our best, Your Honor, to get that to you within a week. If there is anything else, we would certainly identify that at the pre-hearing memo. I don't expect there to be anything else.
Just to be very specific, mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is my recollection that that the PSC team indicated there may be some materials that you would like to bring into the record that are supplementary to what mm-hmm. is already in the project file that has been distributed by city staff. And you indicated to me you thought that would be a great deal of material, but because it's a 12,000-page record, you still haven't reviewed it all, so you can't say that, yep, it's all there, or that we want more in there. And if you want more, you're going to agree to bring it forward within a week or so. So we'll say, close the business next Wednesday, get it to Karen, and make sure you share a copy with the city staff team. And city staff, if it's a PSC numbered bait stamp correctly, please do make every best effort to get it up on the online website that shows these are supplementary materials. And to members of the public, you can look for things to be posted probably the day after the close of business Wednesday next week, which would be next Thursday. You'll see any supplementary materials that PSC might be trying to bring into record. Okay? Does that make sense? S-E-N-S-E, sense.
Here we go. We're getting in the swing of things here. Okay, good.
All right.
Never think of the word, yes.
Okay, so you all know the deadlines. I'll do my best to get you out a short written memorialization of the dates that we've set today. And we'll move forward, and we'll be adjourned here on our pre-hearing conference. And see you all at 6:28, unless the motions are granted. Okay. We're adjourned.